Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The worst fears of Republicans were realized this week as Donald Trump stabbed his own party in the back over a plan to fund the government. And now that Trump is best friends forever with Chuck and Nancy, where does that leave Paul Ryan? In Wisconsin, the plan to give Foxconn $3 billion to open a factory advances. Now the company may even get a golden ticket straight to the conservative state Supreme Court if it's sued. And speaking of golden tickets, Sheriff David Clark got his own last week, a ticket out of Milwaukee to work for a Trump super PAC. All that and more from the best political team in Wisconsin today on Politics. Good afternoon. I'm David Haynes, the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I'm joined in studio this afternoon by Dan Bice, columnist, and Mary Spicuzza, reporter for the Journal Sentinel. Dan, we had Paul Ryan in last Friday.
It was a fun 30-minute.
Cut off rather abruptly by his handlers, but good to have him back. And you ask him a question about something that Charlie Sykes had said. Let's play that tape, and then we'll talk about how it relates to what Donald Trump did yesterday.
Okay. Did you see Charlie Sykes' comments about you on Sunday?
No.
He said that you have a Faustian bargain with Donald Trump, and in exchange for selling your soul, you have done it for tax cuts and tax reform. And the comments, people seem to agree, and it got a pretty strong response. Do you think that's a...
Do I agree with him? No, I don't.
So that's a no.
That's a no. It put me down as a no.
So put him down as a no, but shouldn't the Speaker of the House, who's a Republican, at least have the right to think that part of the bargain with Donald Trump is that he won't, the president, that is, won't stab his own party in the back?
Well, you know, Donald Trump is not, and we need to be reminded of this occasionally, he's not a traditional mainstream Republican. He's not Mike Pence.
He may not be a Republican.
We don't know. But, I mean, he won as a Republican.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question had to do with the fact that Paul Ryan is somewhat tepid in his criticism of the president, somebody who used to be considered the conscience of the party, you know, even when he disagrees with him strongly on the pardon of Joe Arpaio, he doesn't even mention Trump in his criticisms. And I think that's what Charlie was driving at, and that's what actually had the conversation with Paul Ryan turned on that as well. We said, you know, why is it that you don't, why is it when you disagree with him strongly that you seem to hold back a little bit? Is it because you have some sort of, you know, deal in your mind or something? He comes back around and says he's trying to accomplish things. That's his focus. But as we saw this week, you know, the president is someone who wants to accomplish things, and it seems to him that he's not getting that done with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. So he then turns to the Democrats, an amazing thing that he's doing.
Yeah, right, the background in this, just for people who haven't kept up with it, is yesterday, in the morning, Paul Ryan said that he would not in any way favor a extension of short-term funding for the government for only 3 months, which is what Democrats wanted. They wanted 18 months to get past the midterms. And in the meeting yesterday with Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, and the Republican leadership, Trump essentially said, okay, I'll take 3 months, exactly what the Democrats wanted. Paul Ryan, earlier in the day, had said that was just a bad idea.
So, yeah, ridiculous, terrible idea.
Terrible idea. They're just playing politics.
And then the president, using a term that everybody uses these days, pivots. But, you know, the thing is, I think it's really true that the president doesn't like to be seen as a loser. And through these first 8 months, outside of appointing a member to the U.S. Supreme Court, he doesn't have very many wins.
Right.
And maybe he's thinking this is the way you go. You negotiate a deal with the Democrats, and then you bring along enough Republicans to get something done. You know, and it's also a little bit, his position on DACA is not very clear. He sends out Jeff Sessions to say we're going to end it in 6 months, but then he comes out yesterday and says that he might work out a deal with the Democrats if the Republicans can't get something done, you know, in 6 months to make sure that this doesn't, you know, doesn't harm the Dreamers. Meanwhile,
he's been really critical of Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, especially like warring with Mitch McConnell. So it's kind of raises questions of, is he like basically trying to put their backs against a wall and say, like, well, you're either going to work with me to get my agenda done or I'm hopping over to the Democrats and I'll see you later.
So meanwhile, there's this border wall issue that's still out there. And there were some people saying yesterday that actually Trump is crazy like a fox, Mary. He's going to put pressure on both parties to get the border wall done by pushing them against the wall in December to once again have to deal with the debt ceiling issue.
You know what was surprising in the Paul Ryan interview? He said he went down to Texas and he looked at the area, and I don't know if you remember what he said.
Yeah.
He said, I actually realized we need a wall. And so I was like,
at least
in some places. Yeah. But it's funny because he said it made it sound like he didn't really believe that until just recently. And he was like, no. I always knew they needed a wall. But
Once he got on the horse and checked out the wall, I know there are photos of him horseback riding.
But, you know, you sort of get the sense that he is sort of agreeing to go along on some of this Trump agenda, like infrastructure, which he's opposed in the past, just to get this tax reform thing done, which he called, what did he say? He didn't say it was the most important, the most impactful piece of legislation he says that they have.
But they have a lot to get done.
They do.
In a very short session here, they have, of course, the budget thing. They have potentially billions of dollars, and they passed the first tranche of that yesterday for hurricane relief, and now another hurricane on the way,
right,
potentially to Florida.
That could be
Florida.
Even more devastating.
That
yeah.
could be very right. devastating.
And you know, the DACA thing, the president turned over Obamacare and repeal and replace to Congress, and they couldn't get it done on a high-stakes issue. Now he's taking a second high-stakes issue that affects a lot of people, just like Obamacare, and saying the ball's in your court again. And hoping for a better result. But I think you have to see the deal that he did with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi in that light, because he's telling them, if you guys don't get it done, I'll get it done in another way.
So do we have a truly bipartisan president?
I don't know that I can really predict what Donald Trump is going to do next, but we certainly have some confused parties, I would say. It's interesting because I know people question whether Trump is Republican, but he has certainly left quite a mark on the Republican Party, shaping their agenda, their perception, their public image. And it's interesting to see more traditional Republicans try to keep up with him, because I don't know that they know what he's going to say or do next either.
I don't know if you can say he's a bipartisan president, just because that would mean bringing everybody together and getting to work. I think he's a president who's interested in Donald Trump. And if that means he has to work with Republicans to get what he wants done, he'll do that. And if it means he has to work with Democrats to get it done, he'll do that.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching Donald Trump. But let's turn now to another interesting local political figure who won't be local for much longer, Sheriff David A. Clark, Jr. He's leaving as Milwaukee County Sheriff, as we've reported, and he's going on to do what, Dan?
He's joining a super PAC for Donald Trump. It's not a very huge super PAC. Corey Lewandowski's gone there. A couple other Trump campaign figures have gone to work for it, and he's going to be a spokesman and an advocate for Trump and for Trump candidates around the country. You know, it basically confirms what we already knew. For the last year and a half, David Clark has had very little focus on Milwaukee County issues. When he tweets and when he goes around and talks, it's all about Trump. So, he's been passed over a couple of times. He interviewed late last year to be the head of Homeland Security. That didn't work out. Then he had another job, a lower-level job, but still a part of the Trump administration. It looks like he jumped the gun by announcing that before it was done, and they then didn't give him that position. It's interesting. There was a story late last week saying that Trump still wanted him in the White House, but that the new chief of staff did not. And
John Kelly, who was formerly at Homeland Security. And
wasn't the story kibosh. Something that he said, like, is that the guy who's under investigation for deaths at his jail and no way or something like that?
Yeah, so he put the kibosh on that as well. So, yeah, and the interesting thing is it went from 4 deaths at the jail to 5 deaths with the recent death last week of another inmate at the jail. So it's, you know, not paying attention to what's gone on here has had some real consequences for the sheriff.
Mary, talk a little bit about what might come next. We have a new acting sheriff. Governor Walker will have to eventually appoint someone. They'll have to run again. But what do you hear? Are you hearing anything at City Hall about better relations?
I think that it would be hard to have worse relations for either, you know, Mayor Tom Barrett, who said he had rode his horse out of town a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the sheriff and Chris Abley did not get along so well.
Milwaukee County Executive.
Right. Yeah. What did Sheriff Clark call him? Like
he said he had penis envy and a number
of
other things.
Sure, right. A trust fund baby.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm thinking that they're going to have a better relationship with whoever is ultimately the sheriff. I mean, I don't want to jump the gun in case it's somebody who has a worse relationship with them. But, I mean, Clark obviously was, you know, butting heads with everybody in Milwaukee County and the city. And
I went to the press conference.
Not a good fit.
Yeah, I went to the press conference for the new acting sheriff, Richard Schmidt, who's been the number two. And just to be clear, he is very much a David Clark protege. He presents himself as that. He said, I owe my career to him. My career skyrocketed after he took effect. But he did try to strike a different tone than Sheriff Clark. During the press conference, he talked about cooperation, a term we never heard Sheriff Clark really talk about, transparency, and accountability, that he was going to balance the budget, another thing that Sheriff Clark didn't really care about. The disconcerting thing that he said was that he thought the jail was being run in an excellent manner. I don't think any one of us looking from the outside believe that things are going extremely well there when you've had 4 inmates and an infant die there and a number of lawsuits as a result. So, I mean, we'll have to see how this works out. But the big question now will be who's applying for the job. We've got 3 weeks, a 3-week window before the governor starts interviews on that. And we have right now, Schmidt won't say whether he's going to apply for that. We have Ernell Lucas, a former captain with the MPD, who says that he will apply. And we have Kevin Carr, the U.S. Marshal, who used to be the number two. He held Schmidt's old job for a number of years. He just sent me an email this morning saying he's considering the possibility of both applying for the job and running, and that if he runs, he'll run as a Democrat. So those are the 3 lead candidates. Plus, Judge Seifert has said that he'll also run as well.
I was going to raise that question. Whoever actually ends up running almost has to run as a Democrat, right? Even
you do,
if
you do,
he or she is really not.
And the thing is, if Sheriff Clark is he's not here, does the election become a referendum still on Sheriff Clark? Because you have two candidates in Kevin Carr and Schmidt, who are very closely tied to him. We have Ernell Lucas, who's been somewhat critical of him, and John Seifert, who really detests him, on the other side. So it wouldn't be surprising if, though Sheriff Clark has ridden his horse off into the sunset, that he'll still be...
Or somewhere.
Yeah, that he'll still be a character here. And secondly, would he come in and endorse a candidate? That would be pretty fun to watch.
You can only hope. I know you're going to miss covering him on a daily basis.
That's what everybody's saying. What are you going to do now? What are you going to do now? You know what? He was on Sean Hannity the other day, and I didn't even feel the need to watch it. So my life is different already.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Dan, we'll get back to hopefully some help for your life here in just a moment. But let's move on now to another couple of major issues in the state. The state budget, which is a little behind schedule, and the Foxconn deal. I spoke with Patrick Marley of our Madison Bureau about both those issues, which are moving through the legislature. Well, Patrick, better late than never. The Republicans are racing now to finish the state budget that was delayed for several weeks by this big dispute over roads and also the Foxconn deal. So where are they at now?
So it looks like the end is near. The Joint Finance Committee on Wednesday finished its work on the state budget. That'll now go to the floor of the Assembly and the Senate. It looks like there's pretty broad agreement after this 2-month delay. So I expect next week both the Senate and Assembly will take it up and pass it. If not next week, then certainly by the early part of the following week, unless we hit some kind of major turbulence.
So there were some changes on taxes. Governor Walker didn't get exactly what he wanted. What did the Joint Finance Committee end up doing there?
So the governor had proposed a pretty broad, though modest, income tax cut that would have hit all income taxpayers, and made some changes for the working poor to restore some money to a tax credit that had earlier been taken away. The Republicans shifted on the Joint Finance Committee shifted away from that and instead made a business tax cut for the personal property tax. And they did some things like get rid of the alternative minimum tax, which largely benefits wealthier taxpayers. So they made a shift away from the sort of tax cut that would have helped the average person and shifted a little more to the wealthy people.
And some big changes on transportation as well, including delay of some projects, right?
Yes, definitely some significant changes on transportation, which had held them up for a very long time. The ultimate deal borrows about $400 million for transportation. That's included. Some of that's in the Foxconn bill. Some of that's in the budget. That's less than the governor had wanted, less than Senate Republicans had wanted. And that is going to mean the east-west I-94 project in Milwaukee is not going to advance. The north leg of the Zoo interchange is not going to happen. Those are the two real big delays that are going to cause some consternation for southeastern Wisconsin. Looks like could be other delays around the state because of this more constrained transportation budget.
And now on the Foxconn deal, the Joint Finance Committee also made some changes, including an interesting change involving how litigation might be handled. Walk me through what happened there.
Yeah, that's the most significant change there. What would happen is that if there's a challenge in court, and there certainly could be because of the environmental aspects of this deal, after a circuit court decision, it could immediately go to the state Supreme Court instead of going to the normal Court of Appeals. And then when it got to the Supreme Court, or as soon as it was appealed to the Supreme Court, any rulings of the circuit court would be immediately suspended and then only put back in place if the Supreme Court took some action to do that.
Has this ever happened before, as far as you know?
I don't know of I'm not aware of a precedent like that. There are some constitutional concerns that some attorneys have raised, particularly on the point regarding suspending orders of the lower court. The concern would be the separation of powers. How much can the legislature tell the court about how it needs to operate its separate branch of government?
And this is tailored only for suits involving Foxconn, though, correct?
It's tailored for any business that is in this that gets this deal. So this particular deal is going to go to Foxconn. Were some other company to get the same type of deal in this, what they call an enterprise zone, then they would also benefit from it. But clearly it is targeted for Foxconn, just like the entire legislation is targeted for Foxconn.
Okay. Well, Patrick, thanks for that update. We appreciate it. That's Patrick Marley from our Madison Bureau.
Thanks, Dave.
So we're back in studio with Mary Spacuzza and Dan Bison. It's time for our favorite time of the week, winners and losers.
Should I go first?
You go first. Dan, who's your winner?
My winner is the new acting sheriff, Richard Schmidt, who did well in his first press conference, as we were just talking about, hit all the right tones and said everything that he was supposed to say, presented a very different agenda than what we expect from Sheriff Clark. He even talked about cooperating with Chief Flynn and the Milwaukee Police Department. So, I mean, he did well.
He didn't yell at anybody, right?
He in fact talked about cooperating with the media on stories and stuff. But at the same time, it's easy to say that stuff. It'll be interesting to see how someone who considers himself a Sheriff Clark protege puts that into action. So,
okay, so Richard Schmidt, your winner. Who's your loser?
Is the Milwaukee Motors in the transportation deal that Patrick was just talking about. You could say, you know, that the governor was a winner because there are no tax increases. They don't have to deal with that. But the bottom line is projects in the Milwaukee area on the interstate around here, I-94, are not going to be done. They're going to be delayed as a result. So in exchange for no gas tax increase, we end up with a delay on the projects here.
Okay, so
we'll
Mary.
We're spending a lot of time on the zoo interchange.
Yeah, I expect to spend a little more time
right,
if you're going west
more
and east.
Than usual. Okay.
So, Mary, who's your loser of the week?
I'm going to say House Speaker Paul Ryan, which, you know, I feel like this always comes up.
His, I feel like you're piling out.
I feel like he just has this, like, bad romance with Donald Trump where, like, they can just, they're not on the same page. He tries to not be too confrontational with him, but then, like, he says he doesn't think he should end DACA, the, you know, for childhood
arrivals. This was last Friday, right, before he came in to see us.
Right, yeah. Last Friday he says, yeah. You know, he shouldn't end this. Then Trump does. Paul Ryan backtracks and says, like, well, I think he did the right thing. We'll deal with this in Congress. But then he's like, oh, but don't play politics with the debt ceiling. And then, of course, Trump works out a deal with Democrats on the debt ceiling. So it just seems like he just can't win in this.
And this morning he's now saying, oh, Trump had to do this because this is his bipartisan moment, and he needs that. So that's what's going on. You know, it was interesting in our talk with him on Friday. I asked him, I point out to him that very few things have gotten across the finish line. He's not accomplished a whole lot as a speaker. They passed bills in the House, but he hasn't gotten them through the Senate and to the president. And he acknowledged, he said, it's frustrating and it's been difficult to get things done. And, you know, he just doesn't have a stellar record right now in terms of
accomplishment. He did blame the Senate, though. He said that we can pass 5 bills in a week, and they can pass one if they're lucky.
That's true.
Right.
He did shift the blame there. But he did say it was frustrating, the inability for a Republican Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican president to accomplish anything.
But,
right,
you know, before...
It's supposed to be the new dawn of the unified Republican era, you know, back from
there. There were a lot of people who were concerned about Trump and the move yesterday where he cut a deal he didn't have to cut with Democrats for whatever reason. Was something that people like Michael Steele were predicting might happen with him.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know when he's paying attention and what he really is.
Yeah, but as I said earlier, you know, he is a guy who doesn't want to be seen as a loser.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when he was here in April of 2016, and it was clear he was going to lose Wisconsin. That Cruz had gotten a pretty good lead. The polls showed he was up about 10 points. I expected Donald Trump just to leave the state, go to New York, camping there, and forget about Wisconsin. Instead,
no, he came back, went to Katie's Diner,
said
I was winning.
He did 5 events on that Sunday, and I would never have expected that because he just does not like losing. And even though everything in front of him was telling him Wisconsin's not going to go for you, he just still went back and did it again. And I mean, it was somewhat surprising to me then, just like this situation is surprising to us now.
Okay, so Mary, who's your winner this week?
Tom Barrett. So Milwaukee mayor was facing a recall from people saying, you know, he had dereliction of duty, the streetcar, lead pipes, and concerns about lead exposure. And it really just fizzled out very quietly. I never saw a single person gathering signatures. I didn't see petitions around town. I didn't see signs or any kind of movement. It was like the quietest recall I had ever, you know, in Madison during the Walker recall, it was like you couldn't go anywhere without seeing people gathering signatures. Here, it was like I didn't find one. So, you know, given I didn't go to places where I heard they were handing them out, like the union,
the firefighters union.
But I don't know that we'll ever know how many signatures they actually gathered because I guess they were going to shred them to protect people's privacy. But I'm going to guess it was not many and nowhere close to the 51,000 that they would have needed.
You know, to roll things back even further, there was a recall attempt, you might remember, against Herb Cole and Russ Feingold over partial birth abortion. That thing failed as well, but the recall people were everywhere, and they ended up turning in 300,000 signatures, which people then used as a database to call and raise money for conservative candidates. But just like you were saying with the Walker recall, you couldn't go to the grocery store without people trying to get you to sign anything. I did not see a single person trying to collect signatures on this. It was a failed effort from the very beginning.
Yeah. And apparently the recall organizer actually apologized to the mayor and
said,
I hope I didn't annoy you too much.
Sorry for the inconvenience. Yeah, sorry for the annoyance this caused. And Yeah, miscalculated.
Okay. So it makes you wonder if they were about, if this was all about something else. Not
it really
so
does.
Yeah.
He did have some interesting comments about that he miscalculated the appetite for change in the city, and that with the growth downtown, people were. So it was kind of like.
But you're miscalculating it a year after the mayor got 70% of the vote.
70-30, against Alderman Bob Donovan. It was not a nail biter.
It was a measurement there that you could have looked at. Yeah. All right. Well, we have time for one reader question, and that comes from a reader who asks, Mary, let me go to you with this first. Will Democrats, whomever they nominate for governor next year to run against Governor Walker, mostly just be running another anti-Walker campaign?
So as we talked about earlier, I would say not if they want to win, because if you spend all this time beating somebody up, you know, there are people who hate Walker who will vote for you because they hate Walker. But this sliver of independents who seem to decide a lot of things in Wisconsin in some of these races, I don't think that's going to win, you know, win over somebody who goes and flips
and
between
the parties.
I don't
think you have to worry about that early on, because if you have a half dozen candidates, as it looks like we might, you have to distinguish yourself from the other candidates. So I think for the next probably nearly a year, you're going to see Democrat candidates for governor beating up on each other, trying to point out why I'm better than that person or why this person shouldn't run. And we saw a little bit of that beginning this week when Representative Dana Wachs, his campaign manager, put out a statement saying Wachs is the best positioned Democrat because, you know, he's not part of the Madison liberal crowd or the Milwaukee progressives, which then led Andy Gronick, who is from the Milwaukee area, to say, you know, why are you doing this, and why are you taking on where our base is? So, I mean, I expect more back and forth between candidates, you know, particularly, I mean, we still are waiting for some people. Feinhaus has not announced if she's going to win. I can get in the race. Matt Flynn has not announced if he's going to get in the race. And there are several other people, and it could be a really crowded field.
Doesn't this get at, though, Mary, about messaging for the Democrats? What does it mean to be a Democrat these days, either in Wisconsin or nationally? I mean, there's a big debate going on. And you see Hillary in her book slamming Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden for not being supportive enough, which reignites with her book tour coming up, this whole big debate that they're hoping to put behind them. But I think in Wisconsin there's this question, too, of what's it mean to be a Democrat?
I think so. And I think that, you know, for a while now we've talked about how Democrats seem to have a very thin bench, where we see a lot of, Republicans, Paul Ryan, Scott Walker, Ryan Priebus, like Gen X Republicans, versus a lot of the statewide candidates for, Democratic statewide candidates have tended to run a bit older. Not all of them, but some of them. So I think that they're trying to kind of figure out who they are, what their message is going to be, what type of person is going to bring people out to the polls. Because even if you hate Walker, you still have to show up and vote. You know, and Hillary saw this with her lack of visits to Wisconsin, is that she was not as inspiring as Barack Obama when it came to getting, like, voters in Milwaukee to actually show up and vote.
It's been a divide that's been in Wisconsin for a while. It actually came up during the recall because there were a number of Democratic establishment figures who did not want the recall to go forward because they thought it would not go well and it would actually bolster the success of Scott Walker.
Plus, and they turned out to be right.
And you see that in the fight almost every year for the leadership of the Democratic Party. The question is, how pro or anti-corporation do you want to be? You have some Democrats who say, you know, that we should be open to just talking with business officials, and we should hit them up for money and so forth. And then you have those other people, the Russ Feingold wing of the party, that says corporations are evil and we shouldn't have any association with
them.
You're
seeing a little bit of that in this Foxconn debate.
Yeah, right. And
with Peter Barker being, well, of course it's in his area likely, but being pretty supportive, but others
saying
not so much.
And there's still the Bernie folks around who feel like the Hillary folks are too establishment, too, you know, and there's still like this ongoing resentment between the two, like, oh, Bernie could have won if he had been the candidate.
But this isn't a Democrat-only thing. You're also seeing that right now on the Republican side, too, with, you know, it's just the Freedom Caucus is a small little element of the Republican Party right now. But, and Paul Ryan represent the establishment.
And as we've seen with Walker and Fitz and Voss, they don't necessarily agree on everything at the Capitol either. So
we have multiple parties, two by name, but many factions. Anyway,
dysfunction all around. Bipartisan dysfunction.
Which is good for us.
Dan, we'll help you get over the loss of Sheriff Clark in the coming weeks. But that's all for On Politics today. I want to thank Dan Bice, and Mary Spacuzza, also Patrick Marley in Madison. Thanks so much for being with us.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.